Even the Wall Street Journal had to admit that there's a, quote, growing gap between upbeat public assessments by U.S. officials on the reconstruction and the grim reality on the ground. Residents have seen little, if any, improvements, despite U.S. promises that basic services would improve quickly. Much of Baghdad still has no electricity, running water, or working traffic lights. Some families have been eating stale bread and drinking filthy water for weeks now, end quote. And we still don't know how many Iraqi men, women, and children were actually killed during the bombing campaign, let alone injured, and how many continue to die with diseases like cholera and stuff because of the contaminated water. And then speaking of democracy, Bush launched this war claiming that the U.S. needed to get rid of a dictator who had all his weapons of mass destruction and restore democracy to the people of Iraq. This is quite rich of him considering he was never elected here in the U.S. But whenever the Iraqis themselves have tried to utilize their so-called newfound democracy, they've been met with resistance, not from Hussein's old apparatus, but from the U.S. military itself. On April 28th, while exercising their right to free speech, the people of Fallujah gathered at a local school to demand that the U.S. troops evacuate it, and soldiers responded by gunning them down, killing 15 people and injuring dozens more. And then 2 days later, people came back to protest the troops. Again, the soldiers opened fire on them. After that, oil workers in Basra demanded the right to elect their own managers, saying, quote, this is our country and we should be free to choose our managers now that Saddam is gone. And then what was Major Mark Tilley, the de facto chief executive of Iraq's South Refinery's response? Well, he says, I've got a refinery to run. I can't change management now. Sounding very much like the colonial occupier that he is. And that's no surprise to us. We know that their priority is making sure that it is oil that is flowing, not democracy that is flowing. And you just look at it in the context of, it's about imperialism. It's about making sure that the U.S. can go in, get as much money, much control of the region as possible. And even though it used to be a word that people thought associated only with the far left and lunatics, conspiracy theorists, now even the mainstream press, Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, are even all having to admit that, yes, it is about empire building and we should be proud of it. Well, I can tell you that most of us here, or all of us here, are not at all proud about the U.S. record on imperialism. But then it hasn't all been gravy for the Bush administration. Weeks after his appointment, one of Hussein's Ba'athist cronies, Ali Shana al-Janabi, the new health minister, resigned at the time of steadily mounting public health crisis after a week of relentless pressure and demonstrations from doctors disgusted at his prominent past in the Hussein regime. So Bush was also forced to fire Garner, who, remember I started the talk out with how he said we should be thumping our chests. Bush was forced to fire him after he had demonstrated his complete incompetence in handling the increasing humanitarian crisis that was developing in Iraq. And what of the corporations that are planning to build Iraq? Will they stand up for workers' rights? Don't count on it. The companies that are leading the looting of Iraqis' oil wealth are some of the most anti-corporations in the world. Halliburton, Stevedores, Services of America, and Bechtel. We all know about Halliburton. That's the company that made Vice President Dick Cheney a millionaire and have quite substantial contracts in Iraq right now. But what about the others? A few months ago, Bush's Department of Homeland Security used the excuse of a national security to intervene in the West Coast dock workers' lockout to force a settlement that, of course, favored the bosses. Imagine that. And the main boss pushing this union-busting deal was none other than Stevedores Services of America. And they also landed the contract for the port in the largest port in the Middle East there around Iraq. Bechtel, another company run by Republican cronies of the Reagan-Bush administration, was behind the efforts to privatize all the water in Bolivia, which produced huge protests by workers and farmers that have so far been able to protect the water rights there. But they also have a very, very long list of other crimes against people that they've been committed, all in the interest of making profits. So don't expect these companies who make the profits by screwing workers in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world will operate any differently in Iraq. And there's no doubt that the people of Iraq have it much worse than most of us, directly as a result of two wars and 12 years of U.S.-led sanctions. But the main thing to remember about the Bush administration is that it doesn't have two separate agendas, one for home and one overseas. The agenda is the same: privatization, increased profits for his business cronies, cutting social services, and attacking workers' rights. And there are some that are still on that may think that the U.S. intervention may be bloody or ill-advised, but that it's necessary to make the world safer for Americans. But actually, the opposite is true. The exact opposite is true. Not only will the war make be more likely to spur more terrorism, but more wars. But Bush is quite clearly using this war hysteria from the orange alerts to crackdowns on immigrants to drive through a host of right-wing policies that he would never be able to sell otherwise. Just take a look at how Bush and Ashcroft have shredded constitutional liberties. Under the Patriot Act, passed with near unanimous support from both the Democrats and Republicans, the government now claims for itself the right to infiltrate any political or religious organization, to monitor emails and phone calls without warrants, and to find out what books you buy or check out our libraries. And that's not enough for them. Under the so-called proposed Patriot Act II, the government wants to be able to strip U.S. citizens of their citizenship. And the definition of terrorism that all these acts use is so vague that it could characterize as terrorism virtually any action or protest. And if you think that this is just rhetoric, consider the case in April last month when the unprovoked attack by police using wooden projectiles and concussion grenades on dock workers and anti-war activists during a peaceful protest on the Oakland docks. It subsequently came out that the California Terrorism Task Force considered the attack part of the war on terrorism under the logic that a protest having the effect of shutting down shipping for a day during a war could be considered aiding terrorism because the war in Iraq was supposed to be about fighting terrorism. So, you know, keep that in mind when Bush talks about, you know, the war on terrorism is exactly what he's talking about. Right. And for all the praise Bush spews on about how great our armed forces are, standing on the deck of the aircraft carrier, you know, seeing how wonderful they are, what did Congress do? Well, on March 20th, they overwhelmingly passed a resolution to, quote, express the gratitude of the nation to all members of the United States Armed Forces, end quote. Then they turned around the next day and the House cut fundings for veteran health care and benefit programs by nearly $25 billion over the next 10 years. So much for gratitude to the armed forces. And then at a time when the state and local budgets are facing the worst funding crisis in 50 years, the government is cutting vital programs for working class people while the price tag for the war is $75 billion and growing, not to mention what it's going to cost in the occupation alone. You have no idea how long that's going to take. And then what about the tax on union rights? In the Department of Homeland Security, Bush has stripped around 175,000 federal workers of their union rights, all in the name of national security again. And he has called for the privatization of 800,000 or more federal jobs. Bush couldn't be happier if the nation reflected the reality of Texas, his former state that he was the head of before he became president. Low wage, lower non-existent unionization, and high profits for his business buddies. That's the Bush agenda. Until now, Bush has been able to focus, keep people focused on the war. This has helped hide his truly disastrous record on the economy. Since he took office, you know, it was only, 3 years ago, the U.S. economy has lost almost 3 million jobs. That's like a million jobs a year out the window. And Bush's only answer has been to hand out more tax cuts to his rich pals. And there's a method to this madness. As the Financial Times suggests, the more extreme Republicans actually want a fiscal train wreck. Quote, proposing to slash federal spending, particularly on social programs, is a tricky electoral proposition. But a fiscal crisis offers the tantalizing prospect of forcing such cuts through the back door, i.e., have a disastrous economy and then use that as an excuse to justify all these cuts that they want to push through. In other words, gives them a chance to go out to say there's no other claim but to go after such programs as Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. But what do we do? This might sound pretty depressing, but it shows what we're up against. We have to remember that the other side of the story, our side, over the past few months. First of all, we saw the biggest anti-war demonstration in a generation. The biggest one being on February 15th, where over 10 million people worldwide protested against the war. After the quick U.S. victory, some people began to express doubts about their anti-war stand. Despite this, there are still thousands of people who became activists against the war and through their experience in the movement more clearly see the connection between Bush's wars abroad and his wars at home. It's up to us, those of us here at the conference today, to organize these people and to continue to build resistance to the Bush doctrine and his imperialist ventures. And second, it was the first time in more than 50 years that the official labor movement took a critical stand against the war, a U.S. war, before it actually started. And although the AFL-CIO issued a statement in support of the war after it started, the national organization, U.S. Labor Against the War, with which Clause affiliated with, has gone on record as opposing the U.S. occupation of Iraq and has called for a national convention of labor organizations in Chicago, here in Chicago in October to challenge militarism and to fight for the workers' agenda here and abroad. U.S. law is right when it says that it will, quote, make the case that the nation cannot have both guns and butter and that the labor movement cannot effectively defend working families in the U.S. if it does not challenge the U.S. assault on working families abroad, end quote. This means that workers' organizations will continue to have a key role in building resistance to the Bush agenda. And also, our side has fought back against some of the worst successes, and workers have led the way. Look at the library workers in many cities are refusing to disclose the patrons' reading habits under the Patriot Act. And many states and cities are refusing to go along with the Patriot Act. Unions are standing up for immigrant and immigrant rights. Of course, much more of this is needed. But these types of resistance are crucial as building blocks in a bigger campaign to push back the Bush assault on working people. As it becomes clear that Bush's policies will continue to bankrupt health care and schools, and that his tax cuts for the rich will not only pay off in any great increase in jobs, bitterness among working people will grow. And these examples are only a start. But we need to continue to speak out on these issues, to work around them, and build the biggest possible resistance on Bush's wars at home and abroad. We know that Bush's war and policies only benefit a tiny minority of the richest people in the country. The occupation of Iraq and other wars Bush has in store in the future are not in the interest of the working people in this country or abroad. And as it comes out, as more comes out that shows all the talks about Iraqis' weapons of mass destruction was just a lie meant to whip up support for the war, more and more people will question this war and the future war Bush's plan. And for the members of CLAWS, I think I can say that we're proud of the work we did before and during the war, and we look forward to continue to build an opposition to the government whose plans will lead us and the rest of the world to disaster.